Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2, as we do every week at this time. Corey, what's going on, my man?
Oh, you know, a little.
A little bit.
Pandemic. Yeah, you know, it's crazy. It's just crazy.
What have you, like, what was your weekend like without no sports? I know we're going on like 10, 11 days now with like no sports whatsoever. What did you do over the weekend?
Well, you know, this will sound strange probably, but I'm generally off on Fridays and Saturdays. And I try to dedicate those to family as much as possible, all the time. So I don't usually have a ton of sports on Friday and Saturdays, as it is. So it's not that much. I was on vacation actually last week. So I was home with the family, all week, and we have a 7-year-old and we've been self quarantining. So there's been a lot of entertaining a 7-year-old.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That sounds like a fun time to me.
That's a lot of work.
So are you, Corey, are you finding yourself, you know, sort of, you know, maybe letting her watch like movies that maybe you wouldn't have before the pandemic? Like, I find myself a little bit like, well, maybe it's okay for them to watch this, or, you know, things like that. Or you're not there yet?
Well, you know, Mom and I have different versions of what we think it's okay for her to watch. But really, she hasn't asked to watch anything like that. She, you know what she wants to watch all the time, nonstop? Naked and Afraid.
Yeah.
She loves Naked and Afraid. And so we watch Naked and Afraid all the time.
I don't know that one. Is it good?
Two people dropped off in a jungle or somewhere, an island, completely naked for 3 weeks. They've got to find a way to survive.
Oh, it's always like a reality show type game show.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they each get like one or two tools. So generally it's like two naked people with like a machete, a pot. And they have to like build shelters for themselves. They all lose like 20 pounds because they barely eat. It's misery. But she's completely enamored with it. So we watch it a lot.
Okay.
Corey, we've been talking a lot about Jadeveon Clowney here on the show ever since Jarrell Casey was traded last week. And obviously, there's been reports out there that Clowney is seeking maybe even around $20 million per season. If you're the Titans and you have interest in Jadeveon Clowney, how would you evaluate what his value is? And what's kind of that number that you would say, all right, that's too much, I can't go that high?
Well, $20 million is a lot. And I guess you're worth what somebody's willing to pay you. And I think Greg Bell from the paper in Tacoma reports that the Seattle Seahawks are offering him $18.5 million a year in a multi-year deal. And if I were him, I would take it. And I like Jadeveon Clowney. I think, you know, his sack numbers aren't Von Miller. They aren't Khalil Mack. You know, he's never had double-digit sacks in a season, but I think he's a good player. But I think he's worth $20 million a year? No, I don't. And so, you know, you like him because do I think he makes the Titans better? Yeah, I do. But you can't sink your whole operation by overpaying a guy. And so, you know, it comes down to the Titans, you know, how much are you willing to bite off? And if you don't get him, what's plan B? Because, you know, you did trade away Jarrell Casey, and he did have the ability to, you know, Jarrell may not have had huge sack numbers, But Jarrell played a lot of the football game behind the line of scrimmage. He was a very disruptive player. And so, you know, you've got to be able to replace that disruption, especially with Dean Pease gone. You know, my whole thought behind bringing in a guy like Jadeveon Clowney is mainly this. Dean Pease is able to draw up pressure. He's able to disguise defense. He's able to dial up pressure regardless of really who he's got on the field. I mean, you remember when they played the Saints, Derek Roberson had 2 sacks.
Yeah.
We saw Logan Ryan. What did Logan Ryan have, like 6 sacks last year? 4.5, 6 sacks, something like that.
Yeah.
So he could get pressure somewhere else. Well, you know, we like Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel, I think he's a good head coach, but he's not Dean Pease. And he may recognize he's not Dean Pease. And he may recognize that the X's and O's, you know, may not be quite as strong without Dean Pease. And so the Jimmies and Joes might need to be better to get to the quarterback. And, you know, if the Jimmies and Joes to get to the quarterback are better, then you can absorb a little bit more on the back end as well. At the defensive back position. So they might be investing more heavily on guys who can hit the Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watsons of the world.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Corey, you know, the 3 sack thing, I mean, you have to have more context than that. I mean, like you said, I mean, interior, you know, defensive linemen are not judged on numbers, really, right? I mean, Damon Kong Su had some sack numbers some years, but other years he didn't, but he was still as dominant as anyone because he would, you know, he'd cave in the offensive line every snap. And I'm not saying that's Clowney, but he makes it easier for other guys. I guess the question really is, you know, what is that number? You would think that Vrabel would certainly have a strong feeling for his value.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's the thing. Vrabel was his position coach and defensive coordinator for a year. And that's one of the reasons I thought the Titans have been after him for a couple of years, or at least eyeing him for a couple of years. Because I think they know exactly what he can do for them. You know, he's a big body. You know, do they stand him up as an outside linebacker, or do they put him down? I mean, I just think they play him a lot like they played Arakpo and Morgan. And so he can really set the edge. And you're right, the sack numbers are the sack numbers, and he had, I think he's had 9 twice, and I think he's had 8. I mean, but he can also set the edge, you know. But he is a disruptive player. I mean, he had 4 forced fumbles last year, 2 fumble recoveries, and an interception. You know, he's a guy who can make plays, and you know, so I think, you know, there is value there. It's determining, you know, how much that value is. How much did Dante Fowler get? Like $16 million a year?
Yeah.
You know, it would be hard for me to give him much more than that. And I think the other part of Greg Bell's story is that the Jets and Titans were each offering him 1-year deals between like $13.5 and $15.5 million a year. And that 15 to kind of $17 million number makes more sense to me. So if he's being offered $18.5 million, I think he should take it.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us. And Corey, this is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you since Brady signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How surprised were you that Tampa Bay was the destination? And does that change the way you view the Titans' decision to go and pick Ryan Tannehill in this discussion now that we know for a fact that Brady was leaving New England?
Well, number one, I thought he was leaving New England. So, I mean, that confirmed that. Now, I thought he was going to be joining the Titans. So I was wrong about that. I thought the Bucs were a possibility because Jameis was gone and they have weapons. I thought going into last year that the Bucs were a team with a lot of weapons, and they are. And if they don't turn the football over 30-plus times, you know, they're going to win a lot of football games. And I think Bruce Arians is a good coach. So I think there's a lot of reasons that decision makes sense for him. But, I, you know, Jared Stillman, you know, told me, you know, Friday, and I agree with him, that, you know, the big thing that stands out is the Titans picked Ryan Tannehill over him. Because I think if the Titans really wanted Tom Brady, they would have got him. And so, you know, that's what stands out to me is, you know, what they saw from Ryan Tannehill and the time that they had him made them, you know, not just want him more than Tom Brady, but, you know, paying him more than Tom Brady. And so, you know, they're going to roll with 17, and, you know, we'll see if he can duplicate what he did last year and more.
Well, you're a big fan poll guy, Corey. I see you doing that on Twitter. Give me your feeling for what percentage of this Titans fan base then will look at this differently, or I guess be judgmental, you know, based on how Brady does versus how Tannehill does. You know, if that's true, if they could have had Brady and they shunned him, how many people feel differently about it?
You know, that's a good question, because, you know, people who go on social media tend to be the more vocal group.
Right.
And, you know, so there's a lot of people who get on there who, you know, just are vehemently against a guy. And there's a lot of people who are vehemently against Brady because he was a Patriot or because of Deflategate, not because he wasn't a great player. And then, you know, I think in the South it tends to be a little bit different. There's more of an allegiance and more of a loyalty towards certain guys and certain teams, you know, the us versus them mentality. And so there, I think there's a lot of people who stuck with Ryan Tannehill through this process because he was our guy. So no matter what, you're going to stick with, he was our guy. I mean, you know, people would throw up, you know, his numbers against Brady's from last season. And I'm like, okay. And Brady threw for 4,000 yards, and he's got 6 Super Bowl rings, and Tannehill's got none. So if you want to throw up statistics, they really don't work for you in this argument. But listen, I understand bringing back Tannehill. I do. I mean, you had 2 good choices to make. I think the only way there's any real not signing Brady blowback is if the Bucs go and win the Super Bowl. And if the Bucs go and win the Super Bowl and Brady, you know, leads the way, then you'll have, I don't know, 33% of the fan base going, oh my gosh, we totally should have gone and done that. But I think most of them, you know, unless Tannehill's just terrible, are going to, you know, understand rolling with their guy. I don't think it'll be awful unless the Bucks go out and win it all. Then it'll be a little bit tougher to swallow.
Corey, last thing for you real quick. We've been talking about the Titans potentially bringing back Logan Ryan. Now that we know that Jack Conklin is gone, Jarrell Casey is gone, how much of a priority should bringing Logan Ryan back be for the Titans?
Well, how much space do they have left?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, if they don't bring in Jadeveon Clowney, then I think it becomes a lot bigger priority because you need a lot more on the back end. You know, the other thing is, you know, they've got a lot of leadership on this team that just walked out the door with Marcus Mariota, Delanie Walker, and Jarrell Casey. You know, those are all veterans who pulled this team out of the abyss and are gone. And so now you're looking at a lot of other guys having to step up. And Logan Ryan being gone would be another big leader. I'm gone. I don't think you pay guys because you need a leader, but I think that can be a part of the reason you pay guys. So, you know, I think the fortunate thing for them is I think the market for Logan has dried up some. So his leverage in negotiating has gone down some. But can they fit him? Can they bring in, if Clowney does want to sign for $15, $16 million a year, can they still bring Logan back? Could they afford it? That's the big question, because they don't have a ton of moves left to create cap space outside of releasing Malcolm Butler or restructuring somebody's contract. You know, I think they very well could go. You know, the nice thing about signing Dennis Kelly, and if you did bring in Jadeveon Clowney, is that alleviates your need in round one for a tackle or for an edge rusher. You could use that number one on a corner, and they could still use the number one on a corner. So they've got that leverage as well.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Corey, thanks so much for joining us as always, and hope you and your family stay safe during this time.
All right, you guys stay safe too. Have a good 4 hours. If you need me, I'll be here.
All righty. Sounds good, my man.
We might take you up on that now.
No, that's what I'm saying. I will be here. I'm working from home for as long as it's going to take.
Appreciate you, Corey. Thanks.
All right, bye.
Hey, bud.
When we come back, we'll react to more of what Corey had to say there, and also how much pressure is on Corey Davis this year for the Titans. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Monday morning. And Joe, a guy we haven't talked a whole lot about this offseason is Corey Davis. And look, being the number 5 overall pick in the draft, there's always going to be these expectations that come with Corey Davis, especially here locally in Nashville. You watch him play, and I think the talent is pretty evident. He had 65 catches, 891 yards, 4 touchdowns, 112 targets, and you thought, okay, I mean, that's a pretty good jump from year 1 to year 2. I think all of us expected year 3 to look more like that. And instead, you know, 69 targets, 43 catches, 601 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I think it left a lot of people just questioning, okay, what exactly is Corey Davis, and what is he going to be in this Titans offense as they move forward? As you kind of evaluate Corey Davis right now, Joe, what do you see, and what do you think ultimately his role in this offense with Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback will be?
Well, I think that Corey Davis, still, when you go back to draft time till now, I think health is still as big a question and an issue as anything. You know, this goes back to, you know, Taylor Lewan, his Bussin' with the Boys podcast. He mentioned that Corey Davis had turf toe this year and was fighting through turf toe, he said, early in the year. Now, of course, that's an injury the Titans did not list on the injury report. But that was an interesting little nugget there from Lewan. Now, he did – Davis did miss one game this year, and it was, you know, a hip injury that was listed. He's had, of course, the hamstring thing really hampered his rookie year. And, of course, he couldn't do stuff during the draft process because of a broken – foot, I believe. I want to make sure I get that right. It's been 3 whole years, so you know, you got to give me some give me a break on that. But he's had a lot of stuff, and so that is part of it. Now, of course, that's also, you know, part of the deal when you're evaluating a guy. And I don't think that Corey Davis, I don't think Corey Davis is destined to justify the number 5 overall pick. But at some point, you move past that. And now, you know, if you're him, I mean, this is a big, big year, obviously, to try to, you know, play well enough so the Titans pick up your fifth-year option. And I think Corey Davis is a good player. I think he's a solid receiver. I don't know that he'll be more than that. I think if you're looking at it from a club perspective, if he can be a good 2 for you, and A.J. Brown does become a real 1 for you, and you got him at, what, 52, then you got a pretty good couple of receivers at a total draft number of 57. That's not bad.
Yeah.
But you know, from the Corey Davis perspective, look, ask anybody on the Titans, and they'll tell you, you know, what a great blocker. How many of these Derrick Henry runs was he involved in where he – got a key block downfield, and all that's great. And that's part of being a football player and a pro, and that's great. But, you know, you've got to, at that position, you've got to produce more. Whether you're picked 5th or not, if you're getting that many snaps, you know, you've got to produce more downfield. So it's a huge year for him. I'm not out on him to the point of, you know, they should just move on and just forget about him. I mean, the 5 is going to hang over him. You know, it's like a scarlet letter on his jersey. But
yeah,
he's got to get back to, like you said, year 2 was a nice step forward for him. And he had some big moments. You think about that win over Philadelphia in particular. I mean, he just looked great. Think about, I mean, when they killed New England 34-10 here in Nashville, he destroyed Stephon Gilmore in that game. You know, it's not like he can't play. You know, so But there just hasn't been enough of that. Now, can he find more of it? And can he and A.J. Brown, you know, play off each other and kind of grow together?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to follow because, Joe, and you would know this better than I. I mean, I kind of noticed a trend starting to develop with Corey Davis at training camp, and that's two things. Number one, there's always like a soft tissue injury going on that he's having to battle through. And number two, when he is on the field in training camp, we're all sitting there looking at him going, oh my goodness, this guy is about to have just a monster year because we see how physically gifted he is and how talented he is. And then last year, you know, the quarterback switch happens with Tannehill and A.J. Brown takes off, Jonnu Smith takes off, and you look at Corey Davis and you're like, okay, where is kind of that ascension point with Corey Davis under Ryan Tannehill? I think that's also on Tannehill this offseason, and as they move into training camp, assuming that they can get together and do, you know, team organized activities, I think that's on Tannehill too to make sure that he is maximizing that relationship and maximizing what Corey Davis can do on the field. And look, most of that's on Corey Davis himself, but I do think Ryan Tannehill, a big part of what I want to see for him this year as they head into training camp, is him really honing in on that relationship with Corey Davis, because I think that's going to be important as they move forward here.
Sure, and hey, it's also Arthur Smith and Rob Moore, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's the coaches, everybody. I mean, and you mentioned those two guys, and let's not forget, you know, Adam Humphries, of course. You know, he commanded more attention when he was able to play. You know, Khalif Raymond gets the occasional shot downfield. You know, even Tajay Sharpe would have some key catches last year. I mean, there were some games where Corey Davis just sort of disappeared. Now, you know, was that just because Tannehill wasn't looking his way? I mean, I have to doubt that it's because, like, the defense was committed to taking him away. I mean, this is where sometimes, you know, he's got to, I guess, make himself more available or be more assertive out there. But you're right. It's also QB receiver chemistry, and for whatever reason, some of it probably just because you knew if you got the ball in his hand somewhere in the field, he was bound to do something big with it. You know, Tannehill and A.J. Brown seem to have just a terrific chemistry right away. So yeah, if Tannehill and Davis can develop that more, then that really bodes well for this offense. I think you can talk about all those other pieces. And, of course, now we know Delanie Walker is not part of the picture. We knew Deion Lewis wasn't going to be. They'll have someone else in that spot. But I still don't think this offense, you know, can be as great as I think the Titans hope it would be unless Corey Davis takes another step as a player.
I agree 1,000%. And, look, you know, he was 24 years old last year. He'll be 25 years old this year. Still some time. Prove, still some time to get better, but you're right when you say that being the number 5 overall pick, that's always going to hang over his head. So we'll see whether or not he can continue to build and look more like the 2018 version of Corey Davis than the 2019 version of Corey Davis. When we come back, which teams in the NFL do we believe have won in free agency? And conversely to that, which teams have lost? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game this Monday morning. And Joe, it's been an interesting week to follow along with NFL free agency. Some teams, I think, have drastically improved their team. Some teams, not so much. We mentioned the Houston Texans, and obviously this is not specifically to do with free agency, but you trade off DeAndre Hopkins and get back, you know, David Johnson and some draft picks along with it. It was just a horrible decision, I think we would all agree, by the Houston Texans, and we talked about that a lot last week. If you're a Titans fan, you feel a lot better about your situation in your division right now, specifically when it comes to the Houston Texans. But there are some teams around the league, I think, that have done a really good job during this free agency period. Obviously, Tampa Bay comes to mind first when talking about Tom Brady joining the Bucs and the potential that's there now in Tampa Bay. I look at a team, though, Joe, like the Dolphins, bringing in Byron Jones, Kyle Van Noy, Shaq Lawson, like all these players with the Dolphins. I think, you know, we expect them to take Tua in the draft. I think the Dolphins, while not going to be, you know, competing for a Super Bowl or anything like that next year, I think the future looks a whole lot brighter right now in Miami than it did this time last year.
Yeah, the Dolphins are definitely a good one there on the winner side. And I think, you know, the funny thing is, I think the Tampa Bay Bucks could be looked at on both sides. I mean, it really depends so much on what you think Tom Brady will do. I guess for me, I'm definitely on the side of he's a diminishing player. I also think that you have a definite chance to have an overall better outcome at quarterback than the 30-pick Jameis Winston last year. So that one is – that's really eye of the beholder. I think the Cowboys deserve a little love. You know, we'll see what happens with Dak Prescott, but they tagged him and they were able to sign Amari Cooper, which I think is, you know, that was the big thing. You know, how'd they handle that? They got Cooper signed. Yeah. Big deal. Now they've tagged Prescott. You know, we'll see where that goes. Just like we're seeing here, we're going to wait and see here what happens with the Titans and Derrick Henry. But I like, you know, signing Gerald McCoy too. You know, that's a kind of sneaky good signing. Haha, Clinton Dix is a good signing at safety. I mean, I think the Cowboys are better. A lot of it does depend on Dak and you know, how he feels and how that goes. But overall, they've kind of kept things together and added a couple nice pieces to the defense. And that looks like the clear best team in the NFC East. But I've thought that before. It didn't work out.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy coming in with a new regime there in Dallas. And you know, remember, Joe, like last week people were trying to connect Jadeveon Clowney to the Cowboys, and I was like, where is like the hidden cap space the Cowboys are getting in all this stuff? Like how in the world are people making this connection?
He's paying him in Jerry bucks.
Yeah, apparently so. I tell you another team that's really interesting to me, and I guess you could view this from a winner standpoint, certainly on the defensive side of the ball, the Indianapolis Colts. You bring in Phillip Rivers, DeForest Buckner joins the fold on defense, which I think you and I both agree, I think makes that defense a whole lot better. If you can get out of Phillip Rivers, kind of the best of Phillip Rivers at this point in his career, and not really the up and down nature that we saw last season, I think you feel really good if you're the Colts. I just kind of question whether or not Phillip Rivers is able to give you that at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, they are another team that, it so much depends on the old quarterback they sign, what you feel about him, and whether they're, you know, winner or loser. You could put them on either side of that. I like the Buckner move. I think they really needed a presence like that up front to help what was a decent defense last year. But I mean, think about, you know, what the Titans did, for example, to them in the second half of that game at Indy when the Titans were down two scores and then dominated, you know, the last 25 minutes of the game, largely because the Colts simply could not stop them up front. And, you know, stop Derrick Henry, of course. Some of that is just Derrick Henry. But overall, that team needed a big infusion, and they got it. And it's just, Rivers, like, as down as I am on Brady, you know, Brady's just – They're similar age, and Brady's done a lot more, and I still think Brady looked better last year than Rivers did. So that one's tough for me. I can't really get behind Phillip Rivers giving them some magical one-year boost here. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. He'll come in here and cut up the Titans. He's certainly had success against the Titans as a franchise, if that means anything. I don't think it means much. I think it depends on what he's had, what he's done against this group and this system. But you know, regardless, I'm just kind of, I'm okay on it, but I don't think a lot of it.
And as far as the losers are concerned in free agency, I mean, I guess you put the Patriots in there. They've lost Tom Brady. It looks like, Joe, they very well could be going with Jared Stidham as their quarterback. They brought in Brian Hoyer over the weekend, signed him to a one-year contract. So I guess right now the quarterback room there is Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer, and I don't know which one you'd feel more comfortable going with if you're Bill Belichick at this point, but the Patriots are an interesting one to me because I still think there's some talent there. I still think they're going to be a good football team. The question is, like, how good? Like, what does that mean, especially if Jared Stidham is the quarterback, because there's a great unknown there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Hoyer signing kind of tells you that they're not going to go out and get one of these other guys. Maybe they still will. I mean, it doesn't mean they absolutely won't, but that's sort of what it signals, and that's surprising to me. And, man, I really, really wanted to see Belichick somehow team up with Cam Newton and see yeah. what that would look like. I mean, very different from what it has looked like in New England. But, you know, that would have been fascinating. And to me, that's the high-risk, high-reward move. You know, obviously, Cam's health is a massive question right now, no doubt about it. And you're talking about having to change a lot of things. But you're also talking about, to me, still a guy who, when he's right, is a top quarterback in this league. And I really was hoping that would be the move. And that would have given us, again, sort of these kind of odd couples on both sides of the league, and Brady with the Bucks, and then Cam and Belichick, kind of okay. Who's wild move here is going to work better? But it looks like the Patriots are just going to sign up for 9-7. I mean that's I can't see where that team. I mean, all we did was talk about Brady's lack of weapons. So now, what is Jarrett Stidham doing with those guys? You know, they're a good defensive team, but I agree. They've got to be on the loser side right now. And, I mean, the Houston Texans, that's the obvious. Yeah. I mean, I think anybody making a list like this right now, they've got the Texans high on the list of the loser side.
No question. And, Joe, I think it's interesting when you evaluate this question from a Titans perspective. Obviously, I think the number one answer right now is still incomplete because we don't know what's going to happen with the pass rusher position. But just based on everything we know has happened right now. You know, you re-sign Ryan Tannehill. You put the franchise tag on Derrick Henry. Jack Conklin is now gone. Darrell Casey is gone. So I think you could make an argument right now, and certainly I don't even think it's an argument at this point. The Titans are a worse team right now than they were when they entered free agency. Still some moves to make, I think. Hopefully, if you're a Titans fan, you're feeling that way. But right now, I think if you're looking at the Titans, you know, losing Conklin, losing Casey, and not knowing specifically how those two players are going to be replaced. You know, obviously Dennis Kelly coming in as a presumed starter at the right tackle position, but I think there's a lot left to be desired and a lot left to figure out from a Titans vantage point with this question.
No, the Titans are weaker. They are a weaker team right now. There is no question. Now, you could, if you love, you know, and a lot of people around the league do, love the don't give the running back the big deal and tag the running back. And if you love the Tannehill deal, then you could still make the case, you know, they're a winner for knowing they have that backfield in place for 2020. But you don't lose Jack Conklin, Jarrell Casey, and really – and not replace either one of them and not be weaker. You're flat out weaker. And, you know, because they had Dennis Kelly before. So Dennis Kelly may prove to be – a good fill-in at right tackle, but the bottom line is you had him as your swing tackle before this, and we're waiting to find out with Jarrell Casey what the corresponding move is. Right now, as it stands, I think you'd have to put them on the L side.
I think so, too. And look, you look around the division, and I think, like I said before, I think you feel good if you're the Titans, especially given what Houston has done. But certainly, no question about it, Titans a weaker team right now. We expect some of these positions to be filled. But, Joe, as you look at the AFC as a whole, I mean, I still really like, obviously, the Chiefs, but I really like Baltimore. You know, you bring in Calais Campbell to a defense that was already really, really good. Lamar Jackson, the MVP winner last year. I still really like the Ravens. Maybe I don't know if I expect them to be quite as dynamic offensively. Like, you would expect there to be at least some regression from Lamar Jackson, but they're still going to be, I think, pretty, pretty good on both sides of the ball, especially like you mentioned last week when we were talking about them. When they're playing with the lead, they're really hard to stop at that point.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's another team, and again, not saying that these moves are because of this, but it's another team that the Titans really victimized up front and trampled with Derrick Henry. Like, so like the Colts and Ravens now, have added a piece, you know, to sort of fortify themselves up front. On the loser side, by the way, I think a team that must be mentioned here would be the Chicago Bears.
Nick
Foles, I just to
didn't
me,
quite do it for you.
I would have. It's just not the answer to me in terms of someone to push Trubisky and to, you know, to possibly take you to another level if he replaces Trubisky. And then they paid, you know, Jimmy Graham big money. I think he's really close to the end. Robert Quinn 5 years, $70 million. You know, a guy who I don't think he's worth that either. I don't like what they've done, and I think they're going in the wrong direction.
When we come back, we've seen firsthand what's happened to the NBA and the NHL in terms of the pause of their season, maybe even potentially the cancellation of their season as we move forward here. Could this affect the NFL season as well? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Peter King of NBC Sports talking about what the future could look like in the foreseeable future for the NFL. Back in on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode. And Joe, look, there's obviously, when it comes to the coronavirus situation, there is a ton of uncertainty as we move forward here. We've already seen what's happened with the NBA, with the NHL, with the NCAA tournament. Pretty much every sporting event out there at this point has been affected in some way by the coronavirus. The NFL obviously not playing right now, and free agency taking place as normal in terms of being able to negotiate contracts remotely. The physicals themselves have been impacted. For instance, Tom Brady took his physical for the Tampa Bay Bucks in New York in a mutually agreed-upon doctor. But the draft is already going to be affected. And I think we've just kind of assumed, Joe, that, you know, we'll eventually have this thing figured out and the NFL season will go off without a hitch. At least that's what I thought when this coronavirus information first started to come into the sports conversation in our country. But I think the fact is, as Peter King was alluding to there, we don't really know, and this could end up affecting the football season as we move down the line here. Hopefully not, but that certainly has to remain on the table in terms of possibilities.
Yeah, we have no idea. I mean, to me, time has already been twisted. I mean, this feels so much longer than it has been. It has not been long. And the thing is, the things that we've been doing, the things that have changed in society and that I feel like most people are listening to and abiding by, although obviously we've got some idiots who still went on spring break and now are testing positive and are spreading it around that way. But I feel like most people are with the program, and obviously a lot of municipalities and states are, you know, implementing their own things. Right now there's nothing federal in terms of, you know, stay-at-home orders. It's not Italy yet. But what we've done here in the last week, I mean, you know, we don't know what the effect is. Right now, the spike in, you know, of course, cases, which is very much tied to, like, people actually getting tested in this country, I mean, that's from before we started doing this. So the impact of this now, we have to see down the road what this does. Again, a scientist, and I'm going to find this, but, you know, there was a quote from a piece about this, and there are a million of them out there, and it said basically, like, if you could go 2 weeks with true, you know, stay at home, don't come in contact with anyone, you would properly flatten the curve and halt this to where we can get our arms around it, to where, again, the big concern is hospitals, hospital beds, ventilators. As you know, you can say whatever you want about it, well, I'll be fine. Well, some people won't be fine. And so if you overload the hospitals and you don't have enough beds, you don't have enough ventilators, that's where it becomes a chaotic and really tragic situation. And doctors have to start picking and choosing who's going to live and die. And this is happening in Italy right now. So long way of saying, like, if we do this right, I think anything's on the table, including the NFL season coming back. If that's your motivation, let that be your motivation. Do what the doctors and scientists are saying and try to stay away from people and give this a chance to work. And obviously we're all rooting on, you know, the people who are trying to develop a vaccine. When that happens, of course, that's the game changer. But who knows when that'll be?
Yeah, certainly up in the air on that as well. And Joe, we've talked about, you know, the NBA potentially playing in front of no fans, both before this decision was made to pause the season and maybe even potentially after, when Adam Silver and the NBA determine it's appropriate to return to action. Maybe you're playing in front of no fans. Maybe the NHL at some point is playing in empty stadiums. Could that happen to the NFL as well at some point? Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk had thoughts on that. Here's what Florio had to say.
I've been thinking about all the things that could unfold. Peter, I don't know where the testing technology is going to be in September, but I could see a scenario where the NFL goes forward in empty stadiums with every player tested before every game. And if you're positive, you're yanked from the pool of players and you're put somewhere until you're free from the virus. If you're negative, you get to play in the game. And I could see the NFL moving heaven and earth to try to make that happen. And again, I don't know where the testing technology is going to be in September, but if we can get to the point where testing is automatic and easy and available, I could see that being the scenario where the NFL sacrifices the revenue that would come through the ticket office, but still makes the TV money by putting the games on TV, which would be wildly successful and have the highest ratings ever if we're still in this weird existence where we're staying indoors all the time.
And Joe, I hear those comments from Mike Florio there, and I agree with the television part of it. If that happens with the NFL and they're playing in front of empty stadiums, I think you're going to see probably the most successful television ratings that we've seen in some time, maybe ever, when it comes to the NFL. But there's one part of that where he's talking about, you know, testing the players before every game. And if somebody tests positive, then you just kind of pull them out of it and isolate them at that point. Well, the problem is, if you're practicing and getting ready for a season and one of your players tests positive in week three, well, guess what? They've been around all of your other players at that point. So you still run into a similar situation that I think the NBA and the NHL is in right now, where, you know, if you're trying to do this and maybe you are planning on playing in empty stadiums, but your players continue to test positive, you can't play at that point. I mean, I think that totally defeats the purpose.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the readiness of testing, where we are on having enough tests to where you could, you know, you could just constantly test guys and then isolate guys. But I do agree with Mike that, I mean, you talk about if we're talking, you know, first of all, the NFL is coming up with, typically comes out with its schedule right around the draft time, maybe a little bit before the draft. It's definitely in April.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're constructing this schedule right now for the fall. I must say that if there is any way to invest and make it possible that you could have this ready-made testing and do it with empty stadiums in the fall, I agree that – I think you said the NFL would move heaven and earth. I agree. I mean – this is already sort of a thing that, you know, the NFL much more relies on TV revenue. You know, it's a much more important piece of the financial puzzle. And I mean, going without that this fall, to me, is something that I would wager that every owner can't imagine. And you know, the pursuit of that is going to be, you know, very intense. And I think this country, if we are still there, if we're still living like this through the summer, you know, I mean, it's, I think the demand would be unprecedented. So, again, but it's just like, it may be that this is not the case as of June. I mean, you know, I've read something this weekend that, you know, a scientist said, you know, this might require 18 months of some level of this kind of social distancing. You know, I mean, it's still right all over the map, and it so much depends on each individual, honestly, like being responsible and slowing this thing down and, like, you know, and also people in our situation not trying to, you know, downplay this and make it political or whatever. Like, you know, we've got to be past all that. Like, we're all kind of trying for the same goal here, but I don't know. Everything is on the table, Robbie, and we are going to spend so much time analyzing it, without data. I mean, we really need data on what this has done and whether these measures, which I think a lot of people are taking seriously, but some clearly aren't, whether they are actually making an impact. I really hope they are.
Well, and the encouraging part to me anyway, and this is just from people that I follow with or are associated with on social media, it seems like most people kind of got the message this weekend, and some of that was taken out of their hands. Like when the Broadway bars aren't open, you can't really go to them.
Right.
But I think a lot of people made the decision this weekend to just stay home. I mean, there was a whole thing on Instagram about like a stay home filter, and all of my friends and people that I follow on Instagram were doing that. So that part, I think, to me, was at least encouraging that while not everyone has gotten the message yet, I think we're certainly in a much better situation now. I think more people are starting to grasp it.
Oh, no doubt. Much, much more. It's much better. The question is, if you have these pockets, you have these spring breakers who are now going back into their, back home, and you got, I think, Tennessee students have to, get out of Knoxville today, and they're all coming, not all, but some of them are coming back from those Florida beaches. So what does that do? I mean, there's still not, even in California, they've had to, I think, even take baskets down because you got, 5-on-5 games and stuff. It's like, please, just can't you just, go shoot alone and just wait this out a little bit? There's still some people who aren't getting the message. How much does that matter? I don't know.
Yeah.
But the more we can get on board, hopefully the shorter time period this lasts.
When we come back, Bill Bender from the Sporting News will join us, and we'll get into some of the more memorable upsets in NCAA tournament history. He wrote a nice piece about that over the weekend. We'll talk to him next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips, and being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.